Welcome to Warriors Off-Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Wes Goldberg, the Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News. During our conversation, we fielded mailbag questions about a host of intriguing Golden State topics.
Wes, thank you so much for joining me back on the podcast. How are you holding up? You know, I feel like I ask you that every week, but we're over 3 months in now. I know everyone's going in waves in terms of how they handle this. Where are you at right now?
Not bad. Thanks for asking. You know, stuff is slowly starting to reopen a little bit. I know that we're being cautious because of the spikes and things like that, but it sort of feels like people are kind of over this, and I think you can only keep people indoors for so long, so it's been nice to like go to parks and there's some outdoor dining options opening up in San Francisco, which are nice. So I'm optimistic.
Yeah, you and I went to an Italian restaurant in San Francisco last weekend. It's my first time to a restaurant in several months. We ate outside. It was pretty good. What was your overall take on just the experience of eating outside at a restaurant in San Francisco? I know you've done it in Florida, but being able to do it in the back.
No, it's great because – you know, the food out here is so great, you know, like the place we went to, it was just a place that's open. I'd never been there before, but I knew that all these sort of places were going to be open. We were down in the financial district, and there's that alleyway with all those open patio areas, you know, typically year round. So I figured those places would be open. So we walked down there, had a really good Italian meal, and it was awesome. It was pretty romantic, honestly. I mean, me and you sharing our first meal, you know, out of quarantine here. It was nice, but hopefully, you know, we're both doing that, you know, going forward, and we don't end up having to go back, because I think Gavin Newsom was saying that he's not going to reverse just because of the spike. So hopefully nothing, you know, that has opened is going to reclose. It doesn't sound like that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I live in Alameda, and Alameda County has been the slowest to reopen. So I'm just getting anxious for things to start opening up back here, man. It's getting brutal. You know, I don't want to have to go into San Francisco every time I want to eat at a restaurant, but first world problems. And another first world problem we have right now is just finding things to say and write about. We're, I think, officially in the dog days of a 9-month off season. We'll put out the call the other day on Twitter for mailbag questions. Not surprisingly, a lot of the questions I got were questions that we have already answered at some point, whether in the written or verbal form. And I don't blame you guys. I mean, I'm having a hard time coming up with questions myself. But there were a few that were a bit different than things we've tackled before. The first one that I thought was interesting, now, I always am hesitant to have you on to talk about Giannis, because whenever you do, there's like an apocalyptic reaction. But at Mid-Level Exception asked, in terms of superstar hunting, do the Warriors have a plan B or C if they don't get Giannis? Other superstars they like that may be gettable, a.k.a. Embiid or Beal, if their teams melt down?
Look, first of all, I think this mid-level exception guy is right on track. I think the Warriors could probably get Giannis for the mid-level exception. You know, because he's just going to play for them so badly, he's just going to take way less money to do that. You know, am I getting the goodwill of your listeners back yet? I don't know.
I hope so.
If that makes a headline, I don't know. I give up. You're not letting me answer any more Giannis questions anymore. Look, I don't know that. Look, I think Giannis is Plan A, but he's Plan A in a way that he's sort of a pipe dream. In that, I don't like the Warriors want Giannis. I already know where this is going, but whatever. The Warriors want Giannis, but they're not counting on getting Giannis either, right? So if Giannis decides, hey, I want out of Milwaukee, hey, I'd like to play with Steph, Golden State seems like a good idea, the Warriors are going to make it so that they can at least offer the Bucks a trade package, or if it's a free agent, they can, you know, figure out a way to make it happen. But beyond that, I don't know that there's – I don't think the Warriors are looking at this as, like, Plan A, Plan B, Plan C in superstar acquisition plans. I just don't think that they think they need another superstar in that way. Now, I think that math changes a little bit if we go into next year And Klay Thompson doesn't look the way that he was looking before he tore his ACL. If he is taking a step back, if Draymond Green continues to take step backs as he ages, if that becomes the case where they don't have another top 20, 30 player to pair with Steph Curry, then I can maybe see them pushing some chips in and acquiring a superstar type player. But to me, if I'm the Warriors and I need to sort of make a big move, Bradley Beal is the guy I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's the thing to me is Giannis makes a lot of sense for obvious reasons. He's a generational talent. I think he fits the Warriors system perfectly. I think he'd pair ideally alongside Steph. But in terms of these other names that people are throwing out there, Embiid, Beal, Ben Simmons, I don't think that any of them make a ton of sense for various reasons. I think that Embiid, as great as he is, I don't think the Warriors need a true score first center like that, as we've talked about before on the podcast. I think that's a lot of money, a lot of resources to invest in a center in the modern NBA. I think it would.
Who's injury prone?
Who's very injury prone? I think it could be a gamble that's not worth taking, especially given everything they'd have to give up to get him. And then Beal, I think Beal probably makes the most sense of those secondary names, but I don't think he's an ideal positional fit. Given how he plays, I think he's probably best as a two. Maybe you give up Clay to go after him. But personally, I think that a healthy Clay pairs better with Steph than a healthy Beal in terms of what they bring to the table. I think that's kind of messing with things for the sake of messing with things. And then Ben Simmons, I don't think makes sense for a few reasons. He's not a great shooter on a Warriors team that prides itself on its shooting and their offense is built around being able to space the floor. He's a point guard, and I don't think he wants or is willing to play anywhere else on the floor. And obviously Steph is going to have that position, man, for some time now. So, that's a lot to give up for another point guard. I just don't think it makes sense. I think Giannis is really the only superstar guy that if they can get, they should do everything in their absolute power to go get. The other guys would have to take a specific set of circumstances for it to make sense.
Yeah, and look, I mean, what if Karl-Anthony Towns shakes loose from Minnesota? We know Steve Kerr loves floor spacing fives. Does he become an option? Something like that. Like, we don't know what superstar. I get it. But, like, it really depends on, like, we're talking about players who are sort of in the rumor mill right now. Who knows what's going to happen a year or two from now, right, when the Warriors maybe have to, you know, make a sort of decision like this. The other thing, but I agree with your larger point. Giannis is the only guy that I would push the chips in for right now who's out there, right? Like, I mean, if Kawhi decides that he wants to come to Golden State, then whatever. But I answered this, a similar question on my podcast where a bunch of people came on back to me on Twitter about it, where I said I wouldn't trade the top five pick for anybody other than a perennial superstar. And because there's a lot of talk out there, and there was like a recent article – that I read that had, like, the Warriors should trade their top five pick for, like, Marcus Smart. I think Marcus Smart's a really valuable player. I like Marcus Smart's game a lot. I would never trade a top five pick for him or any other. But we get these questions all the time. I mean, we were talking about this before. Like, it's the same questions over and over again. Who should the Warriors trade their top five pick for? They should obviously trade it for a veteran who can play and contribute right away to a playoff team. And I just think that that opportunity cost is too great, that you can't do that unless it's for a perennial all-star. And again, people came at me on Twitter, like, you're not going to get a perennial all-star other than Giannis for that top five pick. And that's sort of my point. Don't trade the top five pick for anything other than, like, this big fish type guy, a generational type talent, a perennial all-star like Giannis, whoever else might become available, if anybody else becomes available.
Yeah, that's the thing about the draft, especially when you're drafting in the top five. Any draft, when you're drafting the top five, you're going to have a chance to draft someone who has the potential to be a franchise guy, who has the potential to be a multi-time all-star. Now, you could very well end up taking someone who is a total bust and is out of the league in 5 years. But, you know, when you have that type of opportunity, which those opportunities don't come along very often, I don't think you give that up just to go for a guy who – you already know his ceiling is going to be just like solid rotation guy.
Yeah, I think, look, the Warriors could do two things with that top five pick after they actually use it. you can develop whoever you take there as the superstar. I think the Warriors fans who write these questions in, they're just so obsessed with getting this next superstar, with sort of backfilling the Kevin Durant role. I don't think they need to do that. I think you could go find a huge talent in the top five. I know it's a weak draft, but don't get caught in the narrative, people. Like, it's a weak draft, sure, but there's going to be a superstar talent taken in this draft. The Warriors have to try to get that player wherever they end up picking. The other thing you could do with this top five pick is, after you use it a year from now, you can use that player in a trade package to go get a superstar that shakes loose from somewhere else. So just because they use this pick doesn't mean that they're not going to get another superstar player one way or the other. I'm not saying they're definitely going to, but it doesn't close the door on that either. So I think the biggest way for the Warriors to just add – they need talent. They need talent and athleticism. They need an influx of real talent and young talent. The best way to do that, the most direct way to do it, I should say, is just use the top five pick and nail it.
Yeah. The next question, and I just kind of want to knock out the Giannis questions here, so we can all talk about it in one fell swoop. The next question is a topic that has been a pretty hot one in recent days, and I haven't gotten a chance to address it directly, so I want to do it now. At Drill Drisboy, I don't know how you pronounce this, Drill Drisboy, will Warriors trade play for Giannis? Now, the reason I wanted to choose this question to talk about was because I have not personally understood the blowback when this becomes a conversational topic, of the people saying, why would you ever trade Clay for Giannis? Clay's a foundational piece of the franchise. He's meant so much to the franchise. Why would you even be willing to do that? I don't understand that camp. Look, I like Clay as much as anyone, both personally and professionally. I think he fits the Warriors' ethos in every way on and off the court. But he is in his 30s now. He's coming off a pretty serious knee injury. And when you're talking about going after a generational player like Giannis, you need to be willing to do whatever it takes to get him, including giving up a guy that, yes, is a future Hall of Famer and arguably the second best shooter in NBA history. But given where they're at in their careers, Giannis brings so much more to the table than Clay. I don't even understand why this is a question.
Yeah, look, it's math, man. Like, if you trade Clay Thompson in a package that brings back Giannis, then you've now extended your championship window from the next 3 years to to a decade almost, right? Like, we think Giannis is 25 years old. He's really good. He's going to be maybe the best player in the league within a couple of years if he's not already. Arguably. But if you get him, you've extended that window. You've doubled it. You've tripled that championship window. It's a no-brainer. And the thing is, you need to see what this thing looks like. Most likely, if Clay comes back and it looks like he's a step slow, if Draymond is still continues to decline, you're going to need to shake things up if you're the Warriors and you want to extend that championship window. We know how I stand on this. If I'm a Warriors fan, I don't want to trade for Giannis. I get it. But if I'm the Warriors, we've been there. But if I were the Warriors front office, I would absolutely be willing to trade anything it took other than Steph Curry to get Giannis. It's a no-brainer. You have to do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there was actually an interesting article today in The Athletic that John Hollinger wrote. And he wrote that Clay actually has the worst contract in the NBA right now, which was interesting. I would have thought that you would put Draymond ahead of Clay in terms of worst contract. But he had a pretty thorough argument, and he explained that there's no guarantees that he's going to come back 100% from the ACL. He's now 30 years old, and he's a guy that even when he signed that max deal last summer, there were a lot of people in the league wondering if that made a lot of sense. And then to have, to still be coming back from the injury and still have all these questions, it raises even more questions. So what do you think – I don't know if you saw that, but what do you think hearing that Clay has the worst contract in the NBA?
It makes for an interesting writing kind of, it's a nice hot take to have. I think we're really far from calling Clay Thompson one of the worst contracts in the NBA though. like, if you think about his game, he's a standstill shooter if you want him to be. And he, like you said, he's maybe the second best three-point shooter of all time, certainly top five, no doubt. If all he has to do is shoot threes at an all-time clip, I think you could do worse. I mean, the guy barely dribbles as it is. I think the biggest, you know, knock on him would be, can he guard the way that he did? And that's what I think is so interesting about the Andrew Wiggins acquisition, is because toward the end of the year, they were using Andrew Wiggins on opposing point guards, ball handlers. And that was interesting to me because that was usually where Klay Thompson would slot in. And if you're able, if you're the Warriors and you're able to now slot Andrew Wiggins on the opposing point guard, who, and Wiggins, I think, is a much better one-on-one defender than a team defender. If Wiggins can handle that responsibility, then you've taken a little bit more off of Klay Thompson's shoulders. And if he's guarding guys on the wing, that's going to be a lot less work for him coming off this ACL tear. So I think there's things in place here that are going to ease the concerns in regards to Klay Thompson's ACL rehab. And so I'm not that worried about Klay. I'm not ready to say that he's going to be one of the worst contracts.
I'm personally not that worried about his recovery from the ACL. If you look at recent history, there's been studies over the past 10 years. There's been such major strides made in terms of the surgery for ACLs. The vast majority of guys who are in their prime, especially wing type guys, who come back from an ACL come back at or close to 100%. And Klay now, he didn't rush it. You know, he's been out of the NBA now for over a year. He's still got several more months before he's going to have to play another NBA game. He's going to have plenty of rest. And, you know, the book on him is he's a hard worker and he always attacks his rehab well. So I honestly have no doubt that he's going to return as close to 100% as humanly possible.
We'll have more of my conversation with Wes Goldberg right after the break.
So the next one I think is a question that you'll appreciate, because we can't have you on the pod and not talk about the one and only Tyrese Halliburton. How viable is a starting five of Steph, Draymond, Klay, Wiggins, and Tyrese Halliburton?
I mean, that's why I like the Tyrese Halliburton fit, is because that could be your closing lineup. You've got Halliburton can guard positions one through three, so you can play him alongside Steph and Klay in a backcourt. I don't like, oh, Klay needs to play shooting, whatever. Like, positions don't really matter that much. You can have Steph, Klay, Halliburton. Klay and Halliburton can just guard the opposing two or three, whatever the best matchup is in the game. You've got Wiggins, who could, you know, presumably play a small ball four position. And then you got Draymond playing center. I think the reason that works with Halliburton is because Halliburton is such a smart off-ball defender. We saw it at Iowa State. The film, it shows up over and over and over again. That dude's just smart. Basketball IQ, basketball feel are all high. My biggest concern is not with Halliburton in that lineup. It's Wiggins. I mean, if you're going to play Wiggins as part of a switch-everything small-ball scheme, he needs to get so much better playing off the ball and just being alert all the time, especially if he's going to be the guy next to Draymond Green in a small-ball front court. So you'd expect that being bracketed by guys like Klay and Draymond and just being coached up by the Warriors staff, that he will get better. Like, you can sort of build, you can kind of bake in an improvement there. It just depends on how much that improvement is going to be. If he can do it, then that works. But I have no doubt that Halliburton can fit within that scheme.
Yeah, to me, this is a lineup that if you draft Halliburton, you can play in pockets next season. Maybe you even, if you're trying to go small, if it's a lineup advantage, maybe you even close a game with that lineup. I don't think you need to start a game with that lineup, but because you're forcing too many guys out of their natural positions. But I agree with you, and we've talked about it many times. I think that is the best thing about Tyrese Halliburton, is how versatile he is and how many options he gives you when it comes to lineups. And I think he's a guy who, from day one as a rookie, could come in and play a solid 25 minutes a night. And he could be playing a good chunk of those at backup point guard. He could be playing some of those at shooting guard. Maybe he can slide over to the three a little bit, too, and defend some threes. I think he's able to do that. The next question is
one more point on that. If you draft Halliburton, if you're the worst, he becomes in that lineup the third best passer in that lineup behind Steph and Draymond. And I don't think he's that far. And then even with Wiggins, he can do ball handling. Like, he's really improved over the last couple of years in Minnesota and what we've seen in Golden State as just a playmaker. Yeah, like the only non-playmaker in that lineup would be Klay Thompson, and he's out there spacing the floor for everybody, having all of that off, you know, off the ball gravity that affects the game. So, now you've all of a sudden you're kind of reconfiguring that Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston type thing, where everybody on the floor is affecting the game, is either a ball handler or a playmaker, or just helping each other out with whether or not they have the ball in their hands or not.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The next question is something I've kind of been struggling with myself, just wondering how the Warriors feel about this guy in terms of his ceiling, his potential. So I'm curious to see what you think. This is from at Witta Glizzy. How high are the Warriors on Jordan Poole? Potential backup point guard even next year?
I think they were really encouraged with what they saw from Jordan Poole at the end of the year, not only as a playmaker, but the amount that he improved defensively. At the beginning of the season, he was terrible defensively. Like, he didn't know where he was. He couldn't stay in front of anybody, and he's small. So he couldn't really make up for it in any way. He's not a freak athlete either. So, but by the end of the year, he just got so much smarter on both ends of the court. And I think they really were encouraged by that amount of improvement. That said, as far as the ceiling goes, I don't think they view him as a starter. And by the way, with the 28th pick, you're not really getting a starter. If you get a rotation player at number 28, congrats, you've won the draft. And I think with Jordan Poole, they believe they have a rotation player. Now, is he a sixth or seventh man? Probably not, at least not yet. But you could do a lot worse than your backup point guard being Jordan Poole, or just like a third guard off the bench being Jordan Poole, like whatever he is. I think he's going to get minutes next year. I don't think he's going to get 20 minutes a game next year. But he's going to get minutes next year because he's now proving that even in fewer minutes, he can make smart decisions. So I think they're encouraged by what they got with the 28th pick.
So what do you think is his ceiling? Just good rotation guy in the NBA?
Yeah, like defensively, that's where the concern for me is. And just because he's so slight, you know, and he's not like Lou Williams, who has like a similar frame, but is like unbelievably efficient as a scorer. Like, I don't think Jordan Poole's ever going to be that. So he probably tops out as an 8 or 9 guy. Which is fine. That's like, you need those players. Yeah. On a good team. He's like your 8th or 9th guy on a good team. And that's a good player. That's a useful player.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think you saw flashes, especially toward the end of last season, that he has that quote unquote X factor you're looking for. He has some wiggle to his game. But I don't think that he's well-rounded enough of a player to be like a truly elite player in the league. I think he's enough shooter, and he's improving enough defensively to warrant 20-25 minutes a night on a very good team for a very long time in the league. Maybe not next season, but, you know, once he starts to get closer to his prime. I think it's going to be interesting to see what his role on next season's team is, because when you look at what the Warriors are probably going to try to accomplish this offseason, in terms of the pieces they're going to add, the draft pick, all those things, the trade exception, mid-level, you look at who they can bring in and you wonder, like, where the minutes going to be for Jordan Poole. Because if their rotation is where they want it to be entering next season, I think he's at best for, like, 11th guy, which is honestly probably where he should be at this point in his career.
Yeah, I think that's fine. And maybe down the road he develops into like a sort of Patty Mills type, where he's a three-level scorer that gives up some on defense, but, you know, just a smart player who just does the right thing and you can just trust him in minutes and can develop into a 6th or 7th guy. Like, maybe down the road that's what he becomes, like, in his prime. But the Warriors are going to not – like, how many minutes is Steph going to play next regular season? Like, it's not going to be more than 35 a game. I think it'll be closer to 30. So
around 30.
Yeah, so you're going to keep his minutes low. You're going to keep Klay's minutes low coming off the rehab. You're going to keep Draymond's minutes low because he's a 16-game player, not an 82-game player. That's going to open up a lot of playing time for guys 9, 10, 11, and 12. That's just the way it's going to happen. So the Warriors need depth more than they ever had because all the core trio, they're all old now. So you want to have more depth than you did before. And so there's Jordan Poole's going to play, like, as long as things go right and he continues to improve and, you know, what the coaches and what we've seen bears out, he's going to have an important role, and you could still have an important role as guy number 11 on the team.
Yeah, and he's only 20 years old, so he's got plenty of time, and I think they got to feel good about where he is right now for a number 28 pick after 2 years of college. And then as far as the backup point guard thing, I think it's just nice that they at least know that he can be a secondary ball handler. That was just a nice thing to learn in some meaningless games sort of the end of last season. I don't think they should be penciling him as their backup point guard. I think it's nice to just have ball handlers that you can go to in a pinch, because you're going to have injuries. You're going to have games where you need that. So it's just a nice asset, I think. And the next question is kind of a fun one that I figured you'd enjoy. This is from at the NBA Analyst One. Knowing the Warriors players and coaches, can you show us what you think an imaginary team-wide text thread looked like once they learned they're not one of the 22 teams playing in Orlando?
Who is the first person to initiate the text thread? It would probably be Draymond.
Yeah.
And Draymond probably says something like, "Thank God, kids, don't have to see you guys for another 9 months. LOL, crying, laughing emoji."
That is. Did you actually just see their text thread? Because I feel like that's exactly what happened.
That's 100% what happened.
I think, and then all the young guys jumped in with just emoji, crying, laughing emojis.
Right.
Even though a few of the young guys deep down were like a little bummed because they wanted to like continue to prove themselves and maybe get out there a little bit more, but they weren't going to say that.
Who didn't respond?
Draymond set the tone.
Who didn't respond? Steph doesn't respond. Andrew Wiggins doesn't respond.
Klay definitely doesn't respond.
Klay hasn't even seen it yet. And this happened weeks ago.
He probably doesn't even have a phone right now.
He doesn't. He left his phone in the refrigerator like 4 weeks ago and just like hasn't even bothered to look for it. Hasn't even realized it's gone.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think Steve jumps in there too and is like, jokes aside, like looking forward to seeing you guys or something like that. Yeah.
Right. And then like sent them like a bunch of articles to read in the meantime.
Right. Exactly. The one I want to close on is a guy I get asked about a lot. I think you do too, even though he's not a big name player by any means. This is from at GSW Reddit, who shout out to GSW Reddit. You're great at what you do. You're on top of everything all the time. How likely do you think it is that they give Jonathan Simmons a look when filling out their roster during the transaction window?
I think Simmons had a better chance maybe taking one of those 10-day contracts that may have been vacated by, like, Dragon Bender or Chasen Randall at the end of a normal regular season. I don't think that the Warriors are moved to the point where they have to bring Jonathan Simmons in. I think that maybe changes if they are granted, you know, a mini camp or some sort of organized league activity, and that it makes sense to do something in the transaction window. But if it doesn't, like, they're not going to just sign them to sign them. Like, they're not going to use more money that they don't have to use to sign a player. So unless there's a really pressing need to even do anything in this transaction window, I don't see the Warriors doing anything, whether it be Jonathan Simmons or whoever. So look, maybe you give him a training camp deal next year or something like that. But there's a reason Jonathan Simmons is in the G League right now.
Right.
And I don't think that he necessarily needs to be on the roster. And I don't think the Warriors are going out of their way to make it happen. But if they have a spot and they're like, look, we can use a big wing who can play physical style basketball, we'll just bring him in for whatever. But I don't see them giving him a guaranteed contract without a meaningful tryout first.
Right. I agree. I think that you want to use those mini camp spots on guys that you just are curious about and guys you want a longer look at. And even though he was with Santa Cruz, they keep in really good communication with the coaches down there. They know what's going on. So I think that they probably feel like they got a good read on where Jonathan Simmons is just from his month or two in Santa Cruz. And, maybe they give him a training camp invite and let him compete for a spot come training camp. I don't think they need to waste a mini camp spot on a guy they already are pretty familiar with. So, and there's a decent amount of guys who are going to be available in the transaction window who might be more appealing to other teams. So maybe they want someone that's a little bit, you know, that they actually have to compete for. Maybe a guy like Gerald Green or Justin Anderson, you know, guys who also have NBA experience and I think maybe are a little bit closer to an NBA return. So they're going to have options. I do think that we're not going to see both Randall and Bender in minicamp. I think they've kind of seen what they needed to see out of those guys. I think you use those two spots just to get a deeper look at someone. And look, the stakes are non-existent. You're not a huge fan. You don't even give them a training camp invite. You know, it's just kind of another opportunity to look at guys.
Yeah, and there's going to be guys that they're going to sign that we didn't see coming either. So,
yeah, there could be someone overseas that wants out of their contract overseas and that we're not even, isn't even on our radar. You know what I mean?
I mean, one guy that I thought about earlier
job
was
to be on top of that.
One guy that I thought about earlier was Nikola Mirotic. Like, remember that guy who like turned? He was really good, and he played against the Warriors a lot. And always played pretty well. I remember him guarding Kevin Durant in a pretty meaningful way in a playoff series, I think, a year ago or 2 years ago. But he turned down NBA offers to go play back in Spain, and because he just likes it better over there, and, like, whatever, I can't blame him. But if he does ever want to make an NBA return, there's a number of teams that make a lot of sense for him, most of which are in California, one of which is the Warriors. We know how Steve Kerr feels about floor spacing bigs. Who knows? I don't know. Like, look, we're not talking about a training camp deal anymore. I just wanted to bring this up because I was thinking about it earlier today. We're talking about more of, like, a mid-level exception at least. Like, he would literally have to take way less money to sign the winning team. But based on the reason why he left, he wants to be on a winning team, right? He wants to play winning basketball, meaningful basketball. So no matter where he signs, he's probably not going to get – you know, $15 million a year contract. He's probably going to, if he does decide to come back, it'll be just to win a championship. And if he does that, maybe it would be for something around the mid-level exception. But it's just an idea I wanted to throw out there.
Wes, great stuff as always. Really appreciate it. You know, hopefully one of these days we can actually sit down in a restaurant inside and have a conversation. But until then, we'll continue to eat outdoors and have you on the podcast. You're actually on news this week, right? Where can our listeners and readers go? They want to read some Wes Goldberg news content.
Yeah, you want my inverted pyramid style news stuff. You can find it over at themercurynews.com. Follow me on Twitter at WC Goldberg. My byline is right in the bio. Yeah, I'm doing news all week, man. It's not bad. You know, I feel plugged in. I left the
toy
department,
so to speak.
Tyree
Talbert journalism. You're versatile.
That's right. Yeah, I can switch positions 1 through 3.
Thanks, man. We'll got to have you on sometime soon. In the meantime, stay safe.
Thanks for having me, man.
Our thanks to Wes Goldberg for joining me on the podcast. It's always a ton of fun talking Warriors with him. Warriors Off Court is a production of the San Francisco Chronicle. Support Warriors Off Court and the newsroom that creates it by signing up for a Chronicle membership at sfchronicle.com/pod.